Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 9th. I'm Ray Graff. You're looking to make a couple of improvements around the house? We have a show for you. Today on the program, licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is here to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, plumbing, property management, joins us to offer his expertise every so often. Always a popular show, so call early, 800-348-2551. If you have a question about something, some little project around the house, 800-348-2551, or feel free to email voxpop@wamc.org. It's Darren Tracy and your home improvement calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's time to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. And welcome back Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. You want to join the conversation? Yeah, a couple lines open. Go for it. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. Some people have already done that, but get in if you will. voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, welcome back. How are you?
Good, Ray.
Great to have you back on the program. All right, so you wanted to talk, well, anything new before we talk about your topic du jour?
On my trip down here this morning, I stopped at a home of one of your listeners because they had contacted me about looking at a project, so I kept putting them off because I've been busy, but finally had a few minutes before the show, so I stopped in.
I think
it was helpful to them. Doug, I won't say the last name.
But, fair enough.
Yeah, and had some basement issues, and I walked through and
it's funny.
Pointed out things that I thought were important and other things that he didn't need to be worried about. So
it's funny. Basement issues come up a lot, dampness and everything
absolutely.
Else. Absolutely. Now, you wanted to talk a little bit about what people should do and what they should know when they hire a contractor.
Right. I mean, I thought if there was dead time, I could speak to this.
My time's dead. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, if you're going to hire a contractor for a project, I suggest that you write down a specific scope of work of what you want to have done and what you expect to have done. And don't assume that the contractor should know this or should do that or iron this out. You iron it out ahead of time. It really solves a lot of problems.
Well, you're protecting the contractor, too. And shouldn't the contractor be asking the right questions before the gig starts?
I think more of the onus is on the owner, to tell you the truth. I mean, contractors should do this, should do that. They're busy. Smaller projects, they come and they go. I think the onus is on the owner to have in mind what they want done and precise scope of work. Of course, there are probably aspects of the project that they may not be familiar with.
Yeah.
That's when they're going through these precise list of considerations that those would come up with a contractor, and the contractor would have an opportunity to clarify those items.
Now, before you sign a deal with a contractor, is it best to have a lawyer take a look?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
No? No. Okay. The number here
Let me specify what I'm thinking of are relatively small projects. If you're talking about a new home, there's typically a contract that the builder will have, and in that case, it's not a bad idea to have your attorney or your real estate attorney take a look at that.
The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Oh, I see. We're going to play Name That Tool. Let's do that in a minute. Let's grab a couple emails, and then right before the break, I'll try to describe this thing. I don't know, man. All right, let's see what happens. Let's do an email or two. Elizabeth writes in, any clue about why the wall-to-wall wool carpeting in my room is buckling and humping in a line across the room. That's some rug. There's a dehumidifier in my basement, and the floor in the room squeaks a little bit. And that's from Elizabeth.
All right. She wrote it. I didn't. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. I'm not sure. It may have you mentioned humidifier, dehumidifier. I'm assuming it's a dehumidifier this time of the year and not a humidifier. It may have something to do with the carpet shrinking up. I'm not even that familiar with a wool carpet, so sorry, I can't be more help on that.
All right. Well, this one is from Julie. Two questions from Julie. I recently had the outside of my wood windows painted and glazed. I closed them too soon. Now I can't get most of them to open. They're not painted shut, just stuck. Do you have any advice on how to get them open from the inside without having to remove the storm windows and trying from the outside?
Yes, I have some advice on that. What I would do is take a utility knife and scribe the perimeter of the contact surfaces as best you can to cut any paint that might be stuck. And then I would take a 2x4 piece of wood or multiple 2x4s. So say your window is 2 feet wide. Get a 2x4 just shy of 2 feet wide. Put it up next to the sash, and with a hammer, tap the 2x4. By utilizing the 2x4 instead of just the hammer, you spread the load out.
Uh-huh.
You don't dent the wood. More likely not to have a unintended consequence
okay.
there.
Second question from Julie. I have a very steep pitched slate roof. When it snows, the snow slides off, lands in big piles in my driveway. My roofer has offered to install snow guards. Do they work? Are they worth the cost?
I think they can work. I've seen them installed. Again, there might be some unintended consequences by installing those. I mean, unintended consequences are a huge gorilla in the closet on construction projects.
Yeah.
It could keep the snow up there and have ice build up. Yeah, that's a pitfall of slate roof. What you could do is try install a couple of these, and what they do, they slide up underneath the slate, are attached to the roof, and stick up vertically, and they tend to catch large amounts of snow coming down. So you could try a couple in one area and see how they functioned.
Okay. Dennis in Clifton Park writes, I find the store brands are driveway sealer is the subject heading. I find the store brands are watery and don't hold up. Is there a specific chemical or material which will hold up on an asphalt driveway? Can you recommend it?
Yeah, I recently recoated an apartment we own, and I checked the ingredients, and all the ingredients from good, better to best at the home improvement store were basically the same. They're water-based and had filler materials, different volumes of filler materials. So there might be some products out there that are more bituminous-based, that where you might have to heat them up and coat them. Typically, I have not seen those applied to residential applications. There is some bituminous filler in what you buy at your big box stores or hardware stores. That's all I can provide on that subject.
All right, time to play another exciting edition of Name That Tool. Darren Tracy is our guest today. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. The number is 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. Got to say, Darren, I have no idea what this is. This is a piece of metal, fairly heavy. It's about the size of a guitar slider, if you know what that is, maybe just a little bit longer than a guitar slider. It's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's what? Hexagonal. Is that correct? Is that 6? Hexagonal?
Part of it.
Okay. And then the top has sort of ridges on it. It's a little bit more narrow, and there is a half of a nut sort of just spinning around the center column, and that's all I'm going to say. It's metal.
And I should add that you chose not to know what this product was before you attempted to describe it.
So and you know, most topics on this show, all shows that I do, I choose not to know, because ignorance is my superpower, and I have no idea what this thing is. It's definitely feels like solid metal because it's definitely got some heft to it. See that? Hear that?
That's good sound. Almost like a Mercedes door closing.
Do you have a Mercedes?
Used to. I'm done with those old classic cars.
All right. Well, that's a different show. The number here is 800-348-2551. You want to play Name That Tool? You're in. Just write us an email or give us a call, and the first winner gets absolutely nothing. And we'll be back. Well, let's see. Yesterday we played Tommy Dorsey from about 1944. There's Artie Shaw from about 1945. Just kidding around here on Vox Pop. All right, it's the oldie station, the really oldie station. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Darren Tracy today and home maintenance, repair, and improvement. Before we get to, and so far no guesses on Name That Tool. Maybe we've stumped the band. Maybe no one cares anymore. You wanted to mention one more thing about hiring a contractor.
Yeah, follow-up on that. I suggest not fronting any contractor money up front until materials are delivered to the site. I know it is a somewhat common practice to front money to contractors in the residential world. I've never really understood that. Most of my construction experience was in the commercial world,
right,
where the contractor is fronting all the money. But on residential projects, I've more or less refused to pay a subcontractor, a contractor, mm-hmm, up front until materials are on the site. Now, those materials are delivered. I've got a check there for them right then when it's delivered.
Okay, well, here's the thing, though, man. It's like, you talk to a contractor, you hire a subcontractor, they're going to know immediately, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. Darren Tracy knows what he's doing. The average Joe, I could hire a contractor and say, hey, you know what, you need $2,000 worth of this. And I'll say, well, geez, he needs it, you know?
Well, they can give me a call or write me an email and ask me to get my opinion on that. Really, that's... It's a simple resource that could be provided to homeowners that would help out a lot.
Okay.
I mean, I've been called in on so many projects where people have been scammed.
Yeah.
Or somehow lost money, or the project has gone wrong. Often it's for miscommunication.
Yeah.
Many times a contractor will bail before they finish the job,
yeah,
because they were paid, I'll be back, I just need the money now,
yeah,
for whatever reason.
Yep.
That is your leverage.
Yeah, well, you're right. And don't pay until it's done. That's...
I mean, I'm a contractor, so
okay,
I understand I'm not...
But I know that you wouldn't hose anybody on payment and work done.
No. I mean, I'm the one receiving the payment, but... you know, there are people, all sorts of people in the world out there.
Right, you are.
And, you know, I'm not necessarily more righteous than all of those. I mean, I do honor everything I've done in the past, but still, it's a good practice have that leverage.
I mean, you seem fairly righteous to me, let's face it. All right, we have one guess on Name That Tool so far. And the number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We're going to go to Vivian in Saratoga in just a moment. Michael's guess is... sounds like a broken pipe extractor.
Ding, 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 ding.
You're kidding
exactly.
me.
Exactly. That's it.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Explain.
Okay. Here, you can read the title.
Okay.
The package that came in.
Okay. It's a half-inch internal pipe wrench. I'll be dipped.
Right.
So this is similar to, and, you know, I was going to say it. It looks like one of those drill bits where if you have a stripped screw... that will do that.
Right.
You
that
could
be
mean?
Called an easy out, typically, and it's
okay.
Got a reverse thread so it catches. But this little item, it appears that there's a gear on one end, as you were describing. Imagine a pipe broken off flush with a wall so you can't get a wrench on it.
Yeah.
An iron pipe, threaded pipe. What do? Well, you insert this dowel-shaped device, and it has these gear ridge mechanisms on one end. And if this part that you were describing is rotating around, if you look closely, you'll see that this rotation is on a cam so that it's larger in diameter as you rotate that. I'll hand that back to you so you can see that.
Oh, yeah, I can see
that,
sure.
when it's in one particular position, it's small enough to get into the inside diameter of the pipe.
Ah.
Then as you rotate it, it rotates around a cam and effectively increases the diameter and grabs onto the pipe. And then the hexagonal part, which you referred, sticks out, extends away from the wall, and you get onto that baby with a pipe wrench or a big crescent.
That was my question.
What do you do for extracting?
Oh, so very cool.
That's impressive that they guess that with such
celerity.
So few words, because often this name that tool, we'll have to give more clues.
What are you saying, that my description was good this time for the first time ever?
I think it was pretty good on a difficult material to describe. I think it was a great guess.
All right. Well, Vivian in Saratoga has been waiting for quite some time, so let's get to the phones. 800-348-2551. It's Darren Tracy today, and let's go. Hi, Vivian.
Hello.
You're on.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. And such a wonderful show. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ray and Darren, I have a question. I own a classic 1980s split level.
Okay.
There is in the lower level a half bath with the laundry side by side. I'd like to put an ADA shower in where the laundry is. Is it possible to move the laundry to the first level, to the upper level? Or is that delusional?
Okay. What is an ABA, Darren?
I think she was referring to ADA.
Which is?
A compliant.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, ADA compliance.
Yeah, so.
American Dental Association? No, it's not.
Right.
Okay.
Disabilities Act.
Gotcha.
Depending upon the space that you have available upstairs, it's shouldn't be too much of a problem to go upstairs. Often it's easier to go up than down because your plumbing flows down by gravity. Whereas if you had plumbing on the first floor, then you wanted to put it in the basement, it might be too low for gravity and you would have to install a grinder pump. So, again, just to summarize that, depending upon the available space that you have, it shouldn't be too difficult a problem.
Wonderful. Just to follow up, would it need to be in line with the original plumbing, or could it be on another wall toward the center of the house? There's a usable space that used to be a pantry.
It could be on another wall, but the closer it is to the main stack, the easier the plumbing configuration.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you, Vivian.
Thank you.
I appreciate your call very much. 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Darren Tracy, we got our name that tool on the first try today, so no more votes on that. Let's go to Chris in Altona. Chris.
Hi. My question is about, I'm thinking of, we're considering converting our, we have radiant floor heat. It's geothermal. It's a hydronic system, half-inch PEX in one slab, and then the two-floor system. It's underneath the floors and then backed up underneath with insulation. So it's real efficient with our heater is a Polaris out of Tennessee. Tank. We've had it for 20 years and it just keeps plugging along, but we're thinking of converting, because the other part of the house is I used a monitor, which has seen better days, and it's very efficient, but they don't make them anymore.
Okay.
You know, runs off kerosene. So converting to that, and instead of using gas, converting to geothermal. So I'm wondering about, you know, doing trenches in the yard, which have to be about 6 feet deep, or drilling. And I believe we have predominantly Potsdam sandstone down there, but I don't quote me. And the water comes down from Mount Marcy from the Adirondack Park.
Okay. A few things there. Potsdam Sandstone, that's my hometown, Potsdam.
Oh, there you go.
Just outside.
Swell.
Okay.
Good
and,
town.
Yeah, and Altona, I've actually worked up in that town at a water plant. Associated with the prison.
Small world.
Can be a small world.
Oh, no kidding.
Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite following you. Do you currently have a hydronic system?
Yeah, it's PEX tubing underneath the floors.
And you want to add another system? I wasn't quite tracking you, Chris. It seems like you did have a system, but you want to add more?
Yeah, I wanted to wonder about converting that to geothermal.
Tying that.
You're
okay,
right.
All right. Yeah, I'm not knowledgeable enough about geothermal systems in detail to provide you information about that. But generally, it sounds like you could do that. The pipes in the ground, typically they're drilled. You could, if you have enough real estate, you can put the pipes in a trench. And for the listeners, that's for a heat transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Generally,
right.
You pick up the relatively warmer temperature from the earth, or cooler, depending upon the season, and use that heat transfer in a loop, and it comes into your home, and you take BTUs away.
Okay.
And then regarding the monitor heat, there are other heaters. A Renai makes a unit heater that are pretty good that you can fire with propane. And then lastly,
right.
I would suggest considering a mini split because they have become quite energy efficient in cooler temperatures. And I know you get a lot of cold weather up there in Altona, relatively close to the Canadian border. So those are some options.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Sorry if we can't be more help on the geothermal today. The number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy's our guest. Don is in Hanacroy. Don, how you doing?
Yes, hi. Good today.
Good.
My question, sir, can you hear me okay?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. My question regards a basement smell we have. Generally a very dry basement. Half of it is finished. The other half is unfinished. The unfinished side has storage and also a workshop. I run a dehumidifier down there all the time. I put dry stuff, and there's no water, and it does not appear to be humid in the basement, but I am getting an odor. I've looked at the walls. I have one area where I have some seepage coming in when there's a real heavy rain, but otherwise I can't figure out what the smell is from.
Mm.
Okay, Don, that's not uncommon in a lot of basements. You said that you run a dehumidifier. Do you know what the humidity level is in the basement?
It's generally sitting around 55 to 60.
Oh, that's good. Anything under 55 is good. 55 or 60. What I would guess is that some material got wet at some point in the past, and the humidity and started to mold and mildew, and the humidity in that local level in moist times of the year, like July, August, and even early September, that provides some food for that mold. Mildew, and that's what you're smelling, and it's really hard to take care of that. I know in my own home, my wife in my own home, we have an older dresser I'd like to say it's a family heirloom, but it's not. It's something we scavenged up when we didn't have two nickels to rub together, and
right.
I just never upgraded it. That was exposed to some high humidity level at some point, and no matter how much we clean that, if the humidity picks back up just a little bit, and we try to keep the humidity level in our house, but if it gets up towards 60, that thing starts smelling again.
This is wood.
Amazing. Yeah. So, once something is exposed to mold and mildew,
yeah.
And it's not a hard surface that you can clean, like this laminate countertop that we're sitting at with all these, the new monitor.
Teleprompter. Yeah, teleprompter. Don't read that. That was from my Midday magazine. You don't want to read that.
I don't
want to
read that. Okay. All right. I'll turn that over
Recycle
towards you.
Recycle the news from noon. Yeah. No, don't do that.
So I don't have a whole, you know, one thing I can, here's an idea is get a fan going down there. The moving air seems to help. Have you tried that in addition to the dehumidifier?
No. What kind of company would I be able to contract with to go and investigate this problem from?
I'm not sure. A competent small general contractor to hunt around to find some areas. You could coat any masonry surfaces clean, then coat masonry surfaces with a masonry paint, such as... A thorough seal is one product. I actually mentioned that to a customer earlier today, T-H-O-R-O-S-E-A-L. There are several out there, but basically that could be coated to that masonry surface, and that could help.
All right, Don, thanks so much, and good luck. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Darren Tracy today, email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll check the email bag right after the next break. Sarah is in Bloomington, New York. Sarah, go ahead.
Hi. I'm about to have a metal roof put on my house, and I'm concerned about the noise. So I looked into insulation, and my contractor is going to get that ISO, poly-ISO stuff that's supposed to be good for that. But my question is, what's the process? Does there need to be a vapor barrier? Does there need to be like a space? I just want to make sure it goes on there right if I decide to do it.
Okay.
Can you help me?
Okay. That depends.
Make sense?
I know that's kind of a cop-out answer. That depends. But you mentioned polyiso. You're probably referring to polyiso cyanurate. It's a rigid insulation, a board insulation often used in roofing.
Yes.
And a metal roof is a fairly expensive undertaking, so I advise spending the time up front to understand the building science associated with that so that, one, you don't create a problem, an unintended consequence. Two, it's an opportunity for improving the energy efficiency of your house with that polyisocyanurate. But you want to be careful about where the dew point occurs and make sure you have adequate ventilation. So there are quite a few factors to take into consideration. Get a detail from your contractor of how he's going to install the product. And then make sure someone lays eyes on that detail who understands potential problems. That's what I would suggest.
Sarah.
Well, that's going to be me. I have a lot of metal roofing on my house. I'm not in my house, but on my property already. But none of it has that kind of insulation underneath it.
Well, if it's
I can read to you what he said would be the process.
Well, quickly, if you want to.
Okay, hold on.
Oh.
Let me find his.
Maybe it won't be that quickly.
Well, I would just say if you have, you said you have various metal roofs, those might be on outbuildings that are not heated.
So they go about installing the insulation boards. They're 4x8. They go over the base decking, fastened and anchored to the base decking when we overlay the ice and water shield and the underlayment paper on top of the insulation. The metal gets laid on top of all that and then gets anchored with bigger nails and screws that will anchor to the base decking.
Wow.
We make sure that the overlay everything in a manner that won't allow any water to intrude through. But that doesn't sound to me like there's an airspace.
First of all, Sarah, you read very well. Do you want to take over Midday Magazine?
No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Darren. Just trying.
Okay. Well, those details reiterate what I suggested, that you should make sure of your building science before you proceed, because when somebody's putting rigid insulation on top of their roof deck, say, versus on the floor of an attic, that tells me that that whole attic space is becoming what they call conditioned space. And so you wouldn't have any ventilation in that conditioned space. You'd want to seal that up. But there are a whole lot of details associated with that install that I would really suggest to check out thoroughly. You can send me an email after the show, Darren@WestBranchInc.com. I answer relatively short, simple emails.
And this is, by the way, I have to say this every time. Yeah, this is, Darren does this because he's a nice guy. He's not looking for work. Sarah, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. That's the number. All right, it's Darren Tracy and Home Improvement. We'll be back. Check the email bag in a moment. A little J.J. Johnson now. Victor Young wrote it, and J.J. Johnson played it there. It's Stella by Starlight here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy's our guest. And all right, so the email bag is full. This is Alice writes in, longtime listener, love today's Vox Pop as I clean the house and landscape while hubby messes it. Cheers from Alice in North Adams. You go get him, Alice. And you know what? Have the lazy hubby get up there and help out once in a while. That's what my wife would say. This is from Betty. Insulating a roof from above. On a prior show, Darren briefly mentioned an option to insulate spaces with no extra headspace as part of a roofing project. I have a 1952 cape with original roofline and gables on one side and a shallow pitch shed roof on the other. Headroom is still 7 feet or less. Did you mention that?
I may have mentioned that, but that ties in precisely to the previous caller who was insulating on top. And I just want to clarify, I'm not looking for work, and I do handle emails free of charge, short emails.
Yeah, and that's what you've been doing that for years. Yeah.
I was feeling a little bit uncomfortable there. I'm not looking.
Exactly.
I'm not soliciting work.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right, so what about this answer? You want me to read the question again?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, insulating a roof from above. On a prior show, Darren briefly mentioned an option to insulate spaces with no extra headspace as part of a roofing project. It's a 1952 cape, original roofline, gables on one side, shallow pitch shed roof on the other. Headroom is still 7 feet or less.
Okay, well, there are some options there. You can, for instance, if you have a cathedral ceiling, I'm not sure if this is a cathedral ceiling, which is a tapered ceiling on the inside, not flat. You would have no attic space to insulate. You could insulate those cavities with a couple of different products and techniques.
You mean fill the whole thing?
Fill the whole thing with the exception of the top, say, inch, and you want that area to be vented so that any condensation that happens, that moisture is carried away. So it comes in the soffit in that little one-inch air space, carried up through and out the ridge vent. So that can be done.
Okay.
Another way to insulate when and without an attic or turning the attic into a conditioned space would be the previous caller where they put the insulation on top of the gable roof. So you put the insulation on the outside, which is actually the best type of insulating detail if you think of yourself in the wintertime, you put that jacket on the outside.
Yeah.
You want to cover up your whole house in a jacket. That's really the best way to insulate a house, exterior walls and roof. Sometimes difficult to do, particularly on historic structures. If you have a brick structure,
sense.
You don't want to cover that up. But other homes where you need some siding, that's the way to upgrade your insulation. Put your jacket on.
All right. Nancy writes in from Argyle. Oh, remember the question about the wool carpet that was buckling? Nancy in Argyle writes, wool carpets can stretch over time, causing ripples. If it's otherwise in good shape and worth saving, just call a local carpet store and ask if they can do a restretch for you. That means that they will pull the carpet off the tack strip along one or more walls and restretch the carpet and reattach it. You will likely have to move the heavier furniture or pay them to do that. And that's from Nancy.
You know, I really like it when your informed listeners call in to augment a question, provide additional information.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
It's a community.
This is from, it's a long question. It's from Sarah. We recently completed a gut renovation of a small house, 500 downstairs, about 400 upstairs. And the upstairs, which is a finished attic with slanted ceilings, the HVAC system includes electric central air and heat. The HVAC subcontractor recommended just one thermostat for the whole house. Well, as you might have guessed, the upstairs gets hot to the point that to be uncomfortable or to be Well, as you might have guessed, the upstairs gets hot to the point that to be comfortable, we have to blast the AC downstairs and be cold before we go to bed. How difficult or expensive would it be to install a second thermostat? There's good access to all the HVAC ductwork upstairs. There's a picture attached, but that doesn't help.
Okay. It's more can be more complicated than just installing another thermostat. You need a separate zone, and that's a function of your ductwork or piping layout.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a separate, appropriately laid out zone, yes, then that's where a separate thermostat could come in really helpful, because that one thermostat is dedicated to, say, downstairs, and one thermostat dedicated to upstairs. That's highly advisable to have a thermostat for downstairs, upstairs, if not more.
Okay.
More rooms.
John writes in, hot water heater sediment. 60 years ago, I love it when emails start this way. 60 years ago, I was watching an episode of Leave It to Beaver. Ward had just taken a bucket of water out of his hot water heater, as recommended by his plumber. This week, I did it by running a hose from the heater to my slop sink. Did I do the right thing? I didn't see much sediment.
Yeah, it's a good idea to drain hot water heaters from time to time. It's great if you have time to do that. Preventive maintenance item. I was just watching a video regarding this last night.
Yeah.
And the plumber was suggesting installing a full port ball valve on the bottom of hot water heaters. Typically, there are these little plastic angle valves, and they're what he described as junk, and they're the orifice is really small, so you can't get all the sediment out. So he suggests if you're installing new or replacing a hot water heater, to install a full port ball valve on the bottom, and that can come with a hose nipple on it. You can buy those fittings. And, you know, every year, every 2 years, every 6 months, depending upon your water source, you can bleed those out and increase the lifespan of your hot water heater.
Okay.
I will just caution you, when you do that, make sure, if it's an electric hot water heater, to turn your breaker off. And do not turn that breaker off until you refill your hot water heater, because if you turn it back on before you refill your hot water heater, you'll cook the element, and then you'll have to replace the element.
That would,
Yeah.
Good advice. All right, now we've had several emails on paying contractors up front. And Michael writes, my New York General Business Laws Home Improvement Contractor Act requires contractors to provide written contracts specifying a scope of work and materials, giving a 3-day cancellation right to homeowners, requiring the contractor to disclose in writing the bank and bank account number in which the homeowner's advanced payment deposit was placed, and specifying a start and completion date, specifying the schedule for interim partial payments at specific stages of the work, among other requirements. That's from Michael. I have not vetted that, but it sounds,
Sounds right. That's great. I don't know that I've ever seen a contract where the contractor has provided the bank information where the money's stored. But yes, a completion date, start date, completion date, those are important.
Okay.
You know, part of the precise scope of work.
All right.
If you run out of information, I can add a little bit more about the hot water heater.
Okay, well, let's go. We have so many calls here.
Okay, go ahead.
And a couple more on the contractor. Rick writes in, years ago I hired a contractor for an addition. 3 days before Christmas, he was putting on his coat and said to put together a punch list. We never saw him again. He actually left tools at our house. Maybe he died.
Again, that's a situation where you don't pay somebody until they're done.
Okay.
You have the leverage. A punch list, for listeners, is a list of items that would be put together by an owner and or the contractor. When a project's all done, we're going to have a walkthrough. We're going to create a punch list. This little touch-up over here, this faucet's dripping here, it's a list. Once those are addressed, then the final payment is released.
Right. All right, let's go to Sebastian in Lenox. Sebastian, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a general contractor in Massachusetts.
Okay.
A small company. We really cater to our local community, and thanks to what I believe is the quality of our work, our communication-oriented efforts, we don't really need to do much advertising because it's all word of mouth,
right,
and referrals from existing clients.
Okay.
I always try to do things in an ethical, obviously lawful or law-abiding way.
Good.
When I took my last classes to renew my construction supervisor license, which we have to do on a regular basis, one of the speakers highlighted the fact that in Massachusetts, by law, you're not allowed to ask for more than 30% of the total estimated cost of a project for a down payment.
Okay.
Furthermore, it seems like there's a golden rule, which is never use your money as a small contractor. So my contract, which was in part drafted and completely reviewed and approved by my lawyer, explicitly explains that every application for payment I provide to my clients is for upcoming expenses.
Okay.
So I was somewhat surprised when I heard Mr. Darren say that no money should be given before materials
All right.
are on site.
Let's let Darren respond to that, and thank you, Sebastian, for the call. Go ahead, Darren.
Yeah, thanks, Sebastian. Well, I appreciate that, but in my experiences as a contractor, I'm looking at the clock here.
Yeah,
I don't
want
to drag this out too much,
yeah.
But I think it's important. I think it's important that the money up front. I work mainly commercially and industrially,
right?
And I always had to front the money up front. You
okay.
go to a bank. And residentially, it seems like it's often common practice to get some amount of money up front.
Right.
Now, you mentioned no more than 30%. Well, I'll tell you what. That can be, 30%
good
could
chunk,
be
yeah.
a good chunk. And yeah. you're giving somebody...
Gentlemen, to be clear, I don't typically ask for 30% unless
okay.
it's a very
All right, gotcha.
Project.
All right.
Yeah.
It is typically more 10-15%.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. And I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong, especially if it's a contractor like you, Sebastian, who doesn't advertise and gets... your work word of mouth,
right.
It's somebody you can depend upon. If it's somebody that has a reputation and you work with, and you mentioned Potsdam, where I'm from, often we'll just go ahead and do it and send me the bill ahead of time, when you're done, that
right.
type. But somebody you don't know,
right.
I just don't think it's a good practice to front money before the contractor spends any money. Like I said, materials show up on the job. You've got $10,000 worth of framing from your local lumber yard.
Okay.
You should be there with a check ready to give to the contractor.
All right. You know what? Let's just leave this topic for now and do a couple of actual, home repair things
okay.
to the last 5 minutes.
I'm into it because
okay.
I'm a contractor.
I know.
It's
well,
important.
Listen,
so.
Aiden wrote in, says the contractor I work for charges at one-third up front. He charges based on the contract rather than on time. One argument he makes for doing it is that the customer can find references for him, but he can't find references on the homeowner. That's an interesting point. All right, so let's just leave this for now because it could be the whole show.
Okay.
Spencer's in Catskill, or where are you, Spencer?
Cottakill, just west of Rosendale.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
Yeah, so first off, thanks, Darren, for your help on my porch last year. You sent me the load charts. Excellent, thank you. And you might remember, you might not, I don't know. Anyway, my question is, what's the deal? I don't like it because it makes it very difficult to replace any outdoor fixtures or windows. Why do some contractors put, I shouldn't say why, because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. Is it good practice to put vinyl siding over old clapboard siding instead of taking the clapboard off?
It's not necessarily a bad thing. Again, you have to take into consideration the dew point, especially if you're adding insulation, which is, I always advise that. It's an easy way to upgrade insulation. Yeah, so you just...
I figured you're just adding a second vapor barrier, so now you could trap stuff between vinyl and
clapboard.
Well,
it depends what the, you know, if the clapboard is old and needs a paint job or if it's been freshly painted. I would say generally preferable to remove the clapboards, but again, it's an added expense too. So generally preferable, going to cost you a little bit more money to do it.
All right, because this makes it hard to replace windows, doors, light fixtures. It's a nightmare.
Okay.
Anyway.
right. All those details. The devil is in the details.
All right, quickly here, let's go over to Maureen in Beacon. Hello, Maureen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So I have a 26-year-old split-level house that has four levels. And when it was built, 10 smoke detectors were hardwired in those four levels. 3 years ago, we replaced them all because I think we must have had some noise happening. So 3 years ago, they were all in place. Everything was fine, but in the last maybe 6 months, they wake us up with this screaming of fire, fire, and it's always at night. And so we have been like ceiling fans. We've kind of blown out the smoke detectors and, and it's always at night, except for the last 2 days. It's been during the day. And so I'm just wondering, do I need somebody to look at the maybe electrical part of these?
Okay, this is interesting. We only have about 45 seconds, Darren, but have at it.
All right, Maureen, I have a project right now where we have a smoke detector project or problem similar to yours. First thing I would do is check each one of those for their battery. Even though they're 120-volt wired, they'll typically have a battery backup. Check the 9-volt battery backup and replace those. Replace all of them and see if that probably take care of your problem.
We have that with like carbon monoxide detector, same deal. And it was beeping as it's plugged in. What's going on here? So that could well be it, Maureen.
Okay. Well, that's what I will do. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Fair enough. You want to grab one more in the last 20 seconds? This guy's been waiting 27 minutes.
I'm quick.
All right, Owen, make it fast, my friend.
Well, my question was involving a contractor that I gave a half deposit to, and he's ghosted me, and I'm just a little concerned. I'm thinking small claims court, but I'm wondering is what the alternatives might be.
Okay.
Okay, well, that's a question for an attorney, but that's a prime example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so that was a good example. Exhibit A. All right, so Owen, thank you. We're out of time. Darren Tracy, spectacular job here, and I think this was the easiest, even though I thought it would be the toughest, the easiest name that tool we've ever done.
I agree. Mean,
we only had one guess, but it was right.
Yeah, it's funky looking.
Yeah, it is, man.
Yeah.
All right, you could, sand it down a little, file it down. You could use it as a guitar slider.
Okay, I don't know what that is, but
maybe
you can show. You can show me sometimes. Is that where guitar?
Dwayne Allman, Allman, or some of those guys, T-Bone Walker, whatnot. Okay, so we're done. That's it. Now, how did we get on to Dwayne Allman? Oh yeah, Darren Tracy, thanks for being here. Support comes from Amtrak, providing service all across New York State, from New York City to Niagara Falls, featuring no middle seats, leg room, summer getaways. Amtrak.com to book. And Stories Nursery, freehold for fall planting, Rose of Sharon, hydrangeas, plus hardy mums, fall asters, flowering kale and cabbage since 1956, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. You know, I was thinking about Elmore James, not T-Bone Walker. There you go.
Can I mention?
Oh, yeah, quickly. Go ahead. Just you have 15 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm not sure my mic is.
You just hit the button.
Okay. Yeah. Tugboat Roundup this weekend in Waterford.
Very
cool.
Cool, man.
Tugboat Roundup, Waterford this weekend. Check it out.
All right. Your mic's on. The show's over. But the Tugboat Roundup, beautiful. All right. We're done. Goodbye.